You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027.
Well, as COVID-19 causes our fiscal deficit to bulge even further, perhaps a little less than anticipated thanks to the recent better-than-expected tax take numbers for November and December, what role should and could incentives such as Section 12J play in supporting SMEs through this crisis and into the recovery phase? As National Treasury pointed out in its 2019 economic strategy document, creating an environment in which SMEs can thrive is inextricably linked to creating conditions in which all businesses can thrive in the country. And one of the main challenges to the growth of small and medium-sized businesses is access to equity finance and access to networks. And to assist these sectors in terms of equity finance and networks, government implemented a tax incentive for investors to invest in these businesses that has really blossomed over the last few years. It's called Section 12J, and I'm sure by now most people are familiar with it. The question is being asked, though, ahead of the budget and the expected news on the sunset clause, which is on the 31st of June of this year, whether the incentive will be extended. Clearly, the industry is lobbying hard for an extension because managers have been making fees on the underlying assets under management, but there have also been eyebrows raised as some managers have continued to raise funds while existing funds remain undeployed. Others might know them as men in shiny suits selling tax-free investments. I'm sure there isn't a shiny suit amongst this lot, though. We've got Darren Fold, a Meta Capital fund manager. We also have Anil Govind, who is a principal or executive director of Innovate Alternative Assets, and Dino Zaccolo, who is a chairman of the 12J Association of South Africa. Thanks for joining us, gents. Dino, Section 12J has obviously been a resounding success in terms of funds raised. Just remind us what this incentive is all about and how much has been raised so far and what sort of impact Section 12J has had on the South African economy.
Hi, Michael. Thanks very much for having us, for starters. Sure. So Section 12J of the Income Tax Act is, as we've just explained, a piece of tax legislation in South Africa. It was brought about in our income tax law in 2009 with a stated intention of doing two things. That's creating jobs and stimulating private investment into SMMEs around South Africa. And effectively, the way government does it is they give investors a very healthy tax break in exchange for making a Section 12J compliant investment. So in very simple terms, if you invest 100 Rand in a Section 12J company in this tax year, being the tax year to February 2021, you can deduct that 100 Rand against your taxable income in the same tax year. Now, the idea was for private managers, who are reputable, of course, to go to raise money from a third-party public and then to invest that money into SMMEs around South Africa. To date, you know, you ask how much has been raised. Well, we as the 12J Association of South Africa, in the middle half of the lockdown last year, commissioned a survey, the first ever in the industry, of our members to find out exactly what has happened in the industry. And just while we're on that, you know, it's worth pointing out that although 12J was brought about in 2009, it was only really when Treasury made some changes to the law in 2015 that the industry really gained traction. So from call it 2015-16, the industry has raised, in our view, nearly 10 billion rand. But I think what's more important, and you made this point when you did your intro, more important than how much has been raised is how much has been spent. And based on the research that we conducted last year, about 5.5 billion of the 10 billion has been spent in more than 360 SMMEs around South Africa. Now, those SMMEs, that's an average, by the way, of 15 million rand per company that investment has happened into so far. Those include renewable energy, student accommodation, hotels and tourism, agriculture, and many more. The other question we wanted to ask, Michael, was, well, what has 12J done as opposed to just having spent money? And the answer was, we believe that we've created to date as an industry about 10,500 jobs, 50% of which are permanent. And I think what's more interesting than just the job creation statistics is the cost to the fiscus, because obviously Treasury it's costing them money in order to create these jobs. And we found that Treasury are paying about 126,000 rand per job through Section 12J in order to create jobs, which if you compare it to other government job, you know, creation incentives out there, is a hugely attractive figure.
I was going to ask you how that stacks up, because we do know that government has other incentives in manufacturing and expanded public works. I mean, have you benchmarked exactly how efficient an allocation of resources by government this is supporting this incentive?
We have done work and we've benchmarked as far as possible. It's sometimes difficult to find out exactly, you know, what the stated costs are that governments are looking to achieve and so on and so forth. But for example, I'll give you an example. In 2010, the IDC and the UIF initiated a job creation fund, which was available to startup companies in respect of expansionary acquisitions, effectively in order to help them grow and create jobs in the process. That initiative prescribed a cost per job of 450,000 Rand and less. Now, if you compare that, of course, to the 126 that I've just referenced, you can start to see, just as a single case scenario, the attraction of what 12J is starting to achieve in South Africa. And that word starting is important and maybe something we can touch on a bit later.
Yeah. And then, Anil, from your vantage point, obviously you advise high net worth clients on entry points into alternative assets. You've been doing this for several years. What sort of impact did the Section 12J incentive have from that moment it was tweaked to help catalyze interest into this specific subset of alternative assets like venture capital?
I think the main thing, you know, Michael, thank you for having us firstly, that the main value, I think, is it gives SMEs access to capital, and especially in a time like COVID or a time that's not so easy for SMEs, firstly, they get this access to capital, and also if they are taking a bit of pain in a tough time, there's also a venture capitalist or a 12J company that can assist them get through this period. And, you know, COVID is not a short-term thing. It could be 3 years, you know, 2-3 years. So how a company copes with it, and also the 12J company also assisting them with networks, you know, with knowledge and making sure that entrepreneur is more rounded so that in the end they survive through this period and then create jobs. And I really feel like the spirit of 12J is to create jobs. And when 12J is utilized for property and stuff like that, it doesn't have the same objective. So we need more entrepreneurship, more private equity plays and stuff like that that will create more jobs. And that'll be good for the government also. But I agree with Dino, you know, 126,000 is much lower than 450,000 Rand. And actually 12J, as shown in the world, in the UK with the enterprise incentives and the US, where there's massive entrepreneurship, entrepreneurship is a much more efficient way of creating jobs than any other way out there that's been proven. Yeah. And so definitely.
Anil, I like to look at the incentive as the government saying to the most efficient allocators of capital in the economy, which is the private sector, go out there and efficiently allocate that capital to have the most impact around job creation and supporting entrepreneurs, rather than trying to do all of that heavy lifting itself, which, as history has shown us, economic history all around the world, governments are not the most efficient allocators of capital. Darren, from your vantage point, I mean, you looked at the marketplace and back in 2017 saw the plethora of funds out there and thought what you would do is offer a sort of fund of funds approach as Meta Capital. Explain to us what you've seen in terms of the evolution of the asset class and your thoughts on this debate that's being had around the sunset clause and what are the key considerations here for government?
Sure. Thank you, Michael. Exactly right. We saw the ability to provide a very popular form of product aggregation, which is taking place in the traditional asset space. If you look at your unit trusts, your ETFs, et cetera, and to bring that level of sophistication through to a private asset class, which is Section 12J, with the main aim to facilitate more capital to these investments by allowing investors a diversified approach so that they can take, similar to the products that they're currently invested into in the traditional asset space. So that in that way, trying to facilitate more capital to these ventures, more capital to these entrepreneurs, which obviously are then allocated, as you say, better allocated through the private sector, their expertise, to create the job creation incentives and create job creation outcomes that the government are looking for. Specifically, when you look at the consideration that government need to take into account to decide upon the extension of Section 12J, it has to be that job to cost metric number that Dino has just quoted. It has to be the application of the initial tax fiscus outflow that goes into the creation of jobs. I think the second thing is that they have to take into consideration the future taxable revenue and the assets that are being generated from these investments, the tax compliant companies that are being created, which pay income tax, VAT, PAYE to employees, etc. They are literally investing into themselves as well as a fiscus in creating future taxable revenue, as well as the alleviating the state from other state incentives that are looked to support the economy through welfare and various other things. With a more job creation in the public, you alleviate those types of of burdens as well. So on a considerations basis, the jobs to cost metric should surely weigh very highly. The future taxable assets that are being created should weigh very strongly as well. And then looking at the space, they've regulated quite strongly into what sectors they can invest into. They've earmarked these high labor intensive in sectors. So I really think that they've got 12J legislation where they need it. They now need to give a chance to grow further.
Perhaps just to Anil's point, maybe have a closer look at those property schemes that haven't really created the kind of jobs impact. Dino, to your research, though, did you sort of measure how effective Section 12J was in weathering the storm for these portfolio companies? Did you find that it built a layer of resilience in these portfolio companies that had equity partners, that had access to networks and resources that perhaps other SMEs might not have through the COVID crisis?
Yeah, I mean, it's the question everybody's asking. And, you know, we use, and we've already discussed a lot around the example of property-backed Section 12J investments. And I'd like to question that because, you know, if you go into what are commonly accepted job multipliers around South Africa, which PwC as an example utilized in some of the research that they conduct, you'll see that, for example, a hotel, which is the one type of property investment that a 12J is allowed to make, a hotel has one of the highest jobs multipliers of any industry in South Africa. So, you know, I suppose the debate, and it's very topical at the moment, Michael, because obviously we're looking at this June sunset clause, which may or may not provide that 12J will end shortly. But one of the things that we need to look at is what is the purpose of 12J? You know, is the purpose of 12J the creation of jobs? Is it to stimulate investment into SMEs? Should money only go into genuine, you know, startups? Each of them has their pros and their cons, and it's a question we've been asking National Treasury quite a lot without a definitive answer. I mean, in response to your question, every investment in South Africa in some way, shape or form has been impacted by COVID. Some and few and far between have been positively impacted, but the majority have been negatively impacted. Now, what does 12J do in my opinion? 12J doesn't change the performance of the underlying. If your business is going to struggle a la hotels in South Africa over the last 12 months through COVID, your business is going to struggle. But what 12J does is it gives the investor an incentive that may change behavior. And that, for me, is the crucial point. You know, capital flight in South Africa amongst high net worth individuals is systemic at the moment. We have never seen so much high net worth capital going offshore in search of safe haven investments like we have at the moment. Now, if 12J is able to convince a high net worth individual or any South African to make an investment into a small and medium-sized business at the moment for 5 years when otherwise they wouldn't have, that for me is a win. And I think that is what 12J is successfully doing in COVID-19. It's not stopping the businesses from struggling. All businesses struggle, but it is changing behavior to keep money on our shores, to generate taxes and to create jobs at a time when we actually can't afford not to.
Dino, when it comes to the sunset clause, I think some of the large Section 12J companies have failed to date to invest a significant amount of their capital under management. And you mentioned that $5.5 billion, I think, of $10 billion has been deployed. That leaves $4.5 billion undeployed. And that must be then sitting in bank accounts earning interest. And one would therefore think that the extension of the sunset clause is also in the hands of the industry. Yet you hear stories of fund managers going and raising new funds when they're sitting with funds under management that are undeployed. Surely it's that kind of behavior that causes Treasury to raise more than a few eyebrows at the incentive.
Yeah, it's, you know, the issue is this, Michael. It's the ultimate chicken and egg conversation. Because without money, one cannot go and do deals. But, you know, the inverse is also true. So what fund managers struggle with in the industry is this conundrum that they face. They can't go out and convince, you know, small and medium-sized businesses to effectively become growth partners with them unless they know they have money. But fund managers in the other way are reluctant to do the same. So I think what one needs to understand is the incubation cycle of an investment into an SME. So, you know, you're not buying a share on a stock exchange in Section 12J. You're finding a small business that is inherently risky, that is backed by individuals who you need to do diligence. And then once you've decided that you're going to make an investment, along comes 200 pages of legal agreements that need to be negotiated, executed, and signed. So I think in order to answer that question properly, you need to go and dissect how that assets under management in the industry has been raised. So of the $10 billion that's been raised in Section 12J, you'll find that the vast majority of it was raised in the last, call it, 2 years. Now, given the incubation period of deals that I've just explained, I would argue that it isn't entirely uncommon to find a situation where some of the money has been kept in cash pending investment. That's the first point. It takes time to do deals. And given just sort of the life cycle of where we are in terms of money raised versus spent, it is to be expected. The other thing is that COVID-19 obviously put a spanner in the works for the industry as a whole. You know, the problem is when you're looking to make an investment in a company whose revenue overnight has gone to zero, how does one value that investment? How does one come to a price without at the same time diluting your counterparty so much that they ultimately lose control over their own businesses? So it has been a very, very interesting balancing act, I think, that the industry has had to perform through COVID-19. But again, I would expect to see that investment rate ramp up significantly over the course of probably the next 12 months. It has already. And that will continue as the industry kind of continues to gain traction and make more investments.
Anil, on that point, it's still interesting to see funds sitting on historic investor capital still raising more money. I mean, what is your view on that?
I think, you know, Michael, there's a responsibility of the 12J house. I think it comes down to the management that there need to be a plan for deployment. If there's no plan for deployment, you should have a limit on what you should raise. Because although long term it doesn't make a difference, but in the short term, you know, it does have an impact. And I think the 12J industry, you know, we in alternative assets for now 4 years, after doing this for 28 years of my life as a CA. And in a nutshell, that responsibility will improve our Chancellor of Government and Treasury. And the question we have to ask Treasury is also, what is the alternative choice they have in relation to growing SMEs and entrepreneurship and also creating more jobs? What is the alternative choice they have? And when you look at it, you know, a lot of those choices are inefficient. For example, when they put 200 billion rand to the banks, you know, that was very underutilized. So the intention was there to help people with COVID, but the actual outcome was not the same. So like in the same way, even with SMEs, there needs to be the responsibility of creating jobs, to promoting SMEs so that they get into this medium-sized companies. Yeah? And that medium-sized company will create the most jobs. And corporates, when they get to a certain level of maturity, they don't create a lot of jobs. They've had that cycle of growth. Whereas in this case here, you're moving towards an SME. You know, a lot of them are not very small. They're more, you know, very small to medium-sized companies that 12J companies are investing into for growth, not a startup mode. And that's the area that creates the most jobs. That's proven in the world, in the US, in the UK. And that's the area to be focused on, you know, in my take. So at Innovate, like for us, you know, it's really 2-3 years, as Dino pointed out, is a very short time before you cancel something. You kind of, as you know, in any industry, start it storms, and then it slowly starts to, you know, it slowly starts to form. And this industry hasn't formed yet, and it's just starting to form. And they have imposed a limit. So last year the raise went from 5 billion the year before, as Dino mentioned, and in 2020 it was only 1 billion rand because every investor had a limit. You know, so you know, it's not like the government is going to lose, you know, 5 billion rand. Times the tax savings. So there is some rules they can impose that will make it sustainable for the fiscus and sustainable for their 12J house and the entrepreneur. And I think that's an engagement that needs to happen, in my opinion. Yeah.
And just as we conclude with about 5 minutes left to go, guys, the other issue for me is also management fees and how those are calculated. Because what we are seeing is if the performance fee earned is on any amount above the net investment, that's the investment minus a tax deduction, you've really got to make sure as an investor that you're convinced that the Section 12J investment is really going to outperform. Surely management fees should be far more standardized and charged on gross rather than net. Darren?
I would agree with you, Michael, definitely. I think you want to make sure that your manager has a carried interest, absolutely, which performance fees does. You want to make sure that the performance fees are aligned with their investment strategy, so you want to make sure that they will be there for the 5 years. It's aligned towards your exit specifically, because obviously that's the bulk of when you have your capital returned. And so, yes, I think a lot of due diligence has to come to performance fees. I think you do have to look at, see, you know, depending on which investment strategy as well. You know, we obviously have asset underpinned strategies, traditional venture capital. Within Section 12, there's various buckets of various different types of investments. But importantly for an investor or their or representative is, yes, have a look at the performance fees, the overall fee structure. Is it reasonable? Does it align with the success of your performance? And does it ensure that the manager has a sufficient carried interest to be there 5 years in time, as well as overachieve their specific hurdle rate, be it risk or net? But I agree with you. I think also one thing to mention, the overall landscape of 12J has certainly become a lot more competitive, a lot more participants, specifically now for fewer allocations of capital. And so generically, we've seen across the space fee structures being competitively reduced. And I think that's just a function of the competitiveness of the nature at the moment, which is beneficial to investors, their advisors, et cetera. But make sure that the performance fee is certainly aligned with the investment thesis and obviously your own investor outcome.
Dina, what is your current feeling, your gut telling you about which way Treasury is going to go with this? I'm sure you actively engage with Treasury as the association. The budget's next week. Are you anticipating to hear more about this in the budget?
So, Michael, we've spent a lot of time with National Treasury, with Parliament. SARS have been, you know, in on the forum as well. A brief background, I mean, Treasury have done a lot of homework. They've also sent out queries and questions of the industry to try and find out more around where money has been invested and to answer some of the questions that you've asked today. I'd say that, you know, that they have had certain queries and certain questions. Those questions were directed at the geographies of investments in 12J. They were directed at some of the industries of investments and so on. So what I would say is that, you know, National Treasury have not been silent on it. They have done their homework. And then, you know, last week, of course, was the State of the Nation, where I haven't in recent times seen a State of the Nation that has been as public-private partnership focused, as sort of focused on the need for the private sector, as you've mentioned, who is an efficient allocator of capital, to get stuck in and to help us out of the rut that is COVID-19. So I'd say we've got two opposing forces at the moment. We've got the need for tax collections, which fortunately does seem to be improving in South Africa. But at the same time, we've never had the need to create jobs, and not just jobs, sustainable jobs that will endure into the future. The Minister of Finance, I believe, was asked last week around Section 12J, and he alluded to the fact that we can expect some form of an announcement in the budget speech of next week. If I was a betting man, I would say that Section 12J will be extended, but I would expect there to be revisions and further clarifications in the law, and so I wouldn't say that it will be changed or retained in its current form without one having made changes to certain elements of the law that are more frustrating to National Treasury. But it would be a total no-brainer, in my opinion, to ensure that 12J, in whatever form, is sustainable in National Treasury's minds to be continued.
So, in the spirit of not throwing the baby out of the bathwater, then, because you probably do need a few changes, Anil, what would be the most efficient changes to make to this legislation to really get it back squarely in line with the spirit of what's trying to be achieved here, supporting SMEs, creating jobs, and growing the economy?
I think of three or four points. One of them is that the job ratio created from the investment of the 12J needs to be a bit more tighter, so that people do not abuse the type of industries that do not create jobs, because that's against the spirit of the 12J. The second part of it is to, as Dino alluded to, you know, the rules must work for the government in terms of the fiscus and not losing too much revenue, and also for the entrepreneur and 12J House. So all three parties, and that's the part of the formation of this industry. I think it's too early to stop it. And thirdly, when it comes to the business side, there needs to be a responsibility of the 12J House to actually implement what they say. Like, for example, deployment needs to be a little bit more tighter than 3 years. You know, I think that 3 years is too long a window, where if somebody looked at it in a five-year period, the return does get affected. Long term, it may not be, but 3 years, you know, you cannot have somebody deploys the money only after 2.5 to 3 years. So, you know, effectively 3 years of the five-year term, you're earning an interest-based return. So, like, there are about 4 or 5 things like that, you know, where if they implement those things, I think you're creating a sustainable industry, and the rules are pretty clear, and people know that it's not as easy just to open up a 12J company, and you've got to be compliant. And I think that will make a difference. And really, for Treasury not to extend this 12J, it will be, in my opinion, very short-sighted. And actually, it needs to be looked at long-term, as has been done in the UK and US very successfully. That model is there for everybody to look at, and we need to follow that. You know, we can't reinvent the wheel with a short, effectively we've had a 2 or 3 year window, because 5 billion of the 10 billion was only raised 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And in my experience, in all the years that I've been covering markets and business and private equity, it's the jockeys. It's the entrepreneurs who can really tuck in, get closer to the horse through a crisis and ride through the storm. They're the ones who are going to help us grow the economy again. And it has to be a question of, if there are issues, sorting out the issues rather than canning an entire incentive. That has helped to see capital flow to those jockeys to get the economy going again. Thank you very much to our round table today. Anil Govind, Executive Director of Innovate Alternative Assets. Darren Fold, Fund Manager at Meta Capital. And Dino Zuccolo, who is the Chairman of the 12J Association of South Africa. It's all over to you, Mr. Minister, next week.